Reiner Schaug from TSN joins us. Schauger, how are you?
Doing good, buddy.
Why?
Doing good. Glad to be home.
Why were you flying from Florida to Phoenix to get to Edmonton?
Yeah, just because we had to guess what time we'd be done work, and then you got to book your flight based on when you think you're going to be done work, and there isn't always the easiest routes home, so we didn't know how long they were going to be, and you're booking a month out, and so, yeah, it was a 4.5-hour flight over to Phoenix, and then a 3.5-hour flight home. It was brutal. Like, it was like 9-8 hours in the air to get home, but what are you going to do? You got to get home.
It's true. Lots to discuss. There seems to be a lot of people in the NHL I've been reading that aren't fans of the three-on-three. What I know that people are saying the NHLPA might balk at this. I just don't see how. I don't see it being an extra 2 minutes of three-on-three when you look at having one less guy on the ice for some of those minutes. In fact, that I'm not sure there's a significant drain on the legs of the players.
See, I don't understand if. To me, if the Players Association puts up a stink about this, it'll be just to put up a stink about it. It'll be to use as a bargaining tool to say, okay, we'll do it, but you got to give us this. They're not just going to say, yeah, great idea, guys, way to go, high five, it's in. Like, that's not happening. If they're going to make a stink about it, to me, because I don't understand what their beef would be. So this is what you get. You get an opportunity for guys to score more goals during the course of a year that actually count to their goal totals. So you have a guy, let's say even 2 or 3 goals difference, and he goes from 29 to 32 or 33. That's pretty significant. That means more money in a negotiation. It's easier on the goaltenders. There's fewer shootouts, like way fewer shootouts that they'll go to, which is less risk of goaltenders being injured, easier on the goalies. And for the few minutes it'll be per player, I do not think the PA has anything to gripe about at all. And if they do gripe, in my opinion, it's just to gripe and as a negotiating ploy. Don't get it.
I would agree with you. I think it's a good thing. Now, I know, you know, a lot of people would say just get rid of the shootout and end ties. I don't ever, like, was that ever brought up? Do you think there'll ever be an elimination of that?
No, I don't think so. I think that the owners still like that. There's a way to just end the game in 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Just get it done. And I think the fans still do like shootouts to a certain degree. But I think that they're certainly wanting less of them. I don't think it was ever talked about eliminating them entirely. I just think it was, how do they get the number down and add some excitement? And to me, it makes complete sense. And I just don't understand what the players would have to beef about. I really don't.
Yeah, me neither. If anything, some of the games will end sooner. So I have no problem with that. Right? When you think about it, rather than guys just sitting on the bench for 5 minutes watching the shootout, they'll be in the dressing room getting undressed.
Interesting, they'll keep the long change too, which is that surprised me a little bit. I thought that they would go back to a normal change.
No, well, if you want offense, like if they really wanted more offense in the game, Ryan, they would put the long change in the first and third periods. It's a simple change.
Yeah, that would be interesting, eh?
Well, I don't see what would be the opposition for it. I don't get it. Like if they're always talking about it, if they want more offense, then here's how you do it without changing significant rules to the game.
Yeah. Well, what would be weird is you'd be lining up in front of the other team's bench for the anthems. That's the weird part. I mean, you'd come out and the team would go to the bench and then the opposing team would be skating around the net.
You can switch. Or you just have them, you stand on your own blue line and then you switch. Who cares?
I know. I hear you. The long change definitely makes a difference. And in 3-on-3, like I talked to one coach from the American League, and he said trying to get a change in 3-on-3, it's nearly impossible. Like it's, you have to, because what happens 3-on-3, the strategy is in the defensive zone, you just play hard man-on-man, like hard man. Like you just match up. You got him, I got him, you got him. You don't switch, just stay on him. And then when you go on offense, the idea is to try and crisscross and to try or just beat a guy one-on-one and just find an advantage. So, like the coach I talked to, his team had lost a few games in a row, I think 3 in a row in 3-on-3. And so the head coach of the team said, okay, gather up all the video and let's come up with a strategy. And they sat there looking at it and looked at it and looked at it and looked at it, and they were like, there's no strategy. It's a goat rodeo. It's 3-on-3. Don't get beat one-on-one. It's man on man the whole time. So I think it'll be interesting to see NHL caliber players doing it. And with that long change, one guy's more tired. You get a fresh set of legs out there, and the game's over.
Oh, yeah. I don't nothing wrong with that, right?
It can be as much about changing strategy, honestly, about the strategy of when to change when to change your players. Like, you might be just as well off with the long change. If you're skating up ice and you're exhausted, you might be just as well off to dump it all the way into the offensive zone so they have to go retrieve and get off and then make them start from their own zone but with tired guys, like, because they won't be able to change on a long change. Like, it's the strategy of just strictly keeping fresh legs on the ice will mean the difference in a lot of games.
Ryan Schock from TSN joins us. Taylor Hall is set to return. I know it's not 100%, but it looks pretty close that he'll be back against the Philadelphia Flyers on Saturday night. And when I look at Taylor Hall, the line that makes the most sense would be putting him with Yakupov and Roy. Nail Yakupov has never produced as many points playing with Taylor Hall as yet with anybody else. It's not close, yeah. Right? Even the run he's had with Derek Roy, right? Like, he's produced 5-on-5, I'm talking, not power play. 5-on-5 points. Yeah, he's produced 11 points, but he's played 350 minutes of even strength, actually 370 minutes of even strength time with him. In only 180, he's produced 11 points playing with Taylor Hall. So that's the obvious one. The outside one to me is putting him with Anton Lander or just going back on the top line. What do you think Nelson does? What would you do?
Yeah, I wouldn't go messing with the top line right now. You got Everly and Nugent Hopkins going at a really good clip right now, Everly especially. I would probably just leave that alone, not throw Taylor back there right away. And we talked about this the other day. You know, I was thinking about it. It as much as Nail has produced well when he plays with Taylor, I don't feel that it's ever really worked. I don't think their styles meshed great. I thought it just seemed like it was... Now, they were never left together for a really long period of time. It was never really given 10 games to try and figure it out. Well, why not? From now to the end of the season, throw him on that line and keep him there. Whatever happens, happens. But give it a really good, long, honest look with Yakupov, because I would be interested to see the confidence and the way that Nail's playing the game right now, the confidence he's playing with. I'd be interested to see how that style, combined with a more north-south type center in Derek Roy, he can still skate. So you let Hall and Roy transport the puck. You have Yakupov there to finish and to do his thing. I'd be interested to see what this Nail Yakupov looks like with Taylor Hall, because I haven't seen Nail quite like this. And I'd be very interested to give that a little bit of time. And if I were Todd Nelson, I mean, really, it could mean the difference if you give it enough time to all of a sudden next year going, whoever the center is, that's a pretty good set, Hall and Yakupov. If they can find some chemistry with that late in the year, and you start next year with Nugent Hopkins and Everly as a pair, Hall and Yakupov as a pair, and then you can kind of sort the rest out. Why not give it a long look and see if it works? Because it's important if it does.
That's very true. Yeah, I don't have an argument about that at all. To me, I'm also somewhat curious to see how Anton Lander would look beside an NHL winger.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you know, I'd also be interested to see how Anton Lander looks with Hendricks and Klinkhammer. And throw him in that spot that Boyd Gordon is in and see what kind of performance you can get from Anton Lander on that type of line in that type of role. And I know they have Boyd Gordon and he does a great job there, but I think realistically that's more where Anton Lander is going to be when long term. So why not see what he looks like in that situation too? Move things around a little bit and give him an opportunity there. I don't know about Anton Lander in a top six offensive role as a two center. I'm not sure that is ever going to be a fit, but he could be a third line center who maybe gets you, who knows, 10, 12 goals a year kind of thing.
Looking to the summer of Craig McTavish, do you see him moving one of his wingers in a deal?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's a big question. And I don't think you or I can answer that until we know what they get back in the draft. And I know that people go, well, what does it matter what at 18? It does matter. If they add another franchise centerman, then that will change what they have up front, and it will change what they have the ability to move. How do you trade Jordan Eberle with the clip that he's on right now? I mean, how do you, the way he's going to finish this season, if he continues, I mean, if I'd have said to you at the midpoint that Eberle is going to push 60-plus points this year, you'd probably said, yeah, right. He was looking like he was going to be like 45, 50 points kind of at the most this year. Well, the clip that he's on right now, this is the way Jordan Eberle was supposed to develop and the way he was supposed to play. So how do you move him right now? Or do you look at it like move him while you got him going so well? So it's going to be really tough to figure out who it's supposed to be if they do move somebody. I don't move Taylor Hall, flat out, don't move him. I don't move Nugent Hopkins, obviously. To me, it comes down to if they get one of those two centermen, Eichel or McDavid, now you can move one of either Eberle, Draisaitl, Yakupov, and try and shore yourself up on the back end. You can make a trade with one of those players, and just depends on the caliber of the defenseman coming back. But to me, those are three assets that suddenly become a little more movable than they are right now. Don't you think?
Yeah, I look at it, and I've always said, like, I know there's a lot of talk about trading Taylor Hall. I think you could trade Hall or Eberle for pieces. The only way I would trade either one of them is if I'm getting an equal player in return.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the only way. And very few teams make that type of trade, right? Like, the owners don't need to trade Jordan Eberle for another winger, right? Like that.
No. They need to trade Jordan Eberle for top-pairing defenseman.
Yeah, and I'm just not sure a team would do that, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's just it. It just depends on the shape of the deal and what it looks like because, I mean, if you have to top it up to get the right guy, and I don't even know who the right guy is, to be honest with you. I don't even know exactly what the name is. Let's say in an alternate universe where the Coyotes don't move Yandle and Ekman-Larsson is a possibility, right? Which he probably isn't anymore. But that would be the type of trade. So I just think that if they add another dynamic offensive player up front, they now have the ability to pull some talent from up front and try and get it on the back end. And I think Draisaitl is a piece they can use to try and do that. I think Eberle, if it were the right piece, is a guy that you could use to try and do that, and Yakupov as well. So it's all about the return and what it looks like. But if you look at the balance of what they have and what they need, doesn't it just make sense to you that if they can make themselves significantly better on the blue line by taking away a little bit of the offensive punch they have up front, that would make this a better team sooner?
Well, they have to improve their back end, right? I have no discounting about that. That and their goaltender.
So how are they going to do that? Are they going to do that by...
I honestly don't think there's a quick fix, Ryan. To be completely honest, and I know that's painful for Oilers fans to hear, I don't see a quick fix.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a quick fix, and then they're saying there's no quick fix, then they're sitting on your hands. And I'll tell you this. If their plan is to wait for Darnell Nurse and Oscar Klefbom to be top-pairing defensemen, then Taylor Hall's deal is going to be almost done by the time they're ready to go with that, right? Like, it's going to be a few years. They need to let Oscar Klefbom develop for a few more years into a top-pairing defenseman if that's where he can get. Darnell Nurse, you going to expect much from him before he's 23? Are you? Because I'm not. I'm going to think, okay, if he can be an NHL player, good. Third-pairing, maybe second-pairing guy in his first couple of years, 2-3 years. But what's a realistic timeline to develop these players into high-end players? So, look, the New York Islanders showed in this previous offseason, you can find quality defensemen if you know where to look. You can.
Yeah, they got to get veteran defense, but not young defense.
Exactly. But by you saying it's not a quick fix, so what? They're waiting for Schultz to be what?
No.
Waiting for Klefbom to be what? And how long are they going to be waiting?
Yeah, I think Klefbom, you just look at the evolution of their development, just the natural process of it. What they need to do, though, is make smart signings of veteran players so you can have Schultz play with a veteran and Klefbom play with a veteran, right? Mm-hmm. I don't see any reason why Klefbom can't play with Mark Fain, in my opinion. There's a guy who's a steady veteran player who's a right-shot defenseman, right? The problem is they spent $4.5 million on Nikitin, who's not a player, unless... And maybe you can play him in your third pairing with Justin Schultz, but he's not a guy that, to me, looks like a real stabilizing veteran presence. That's the problem.
Oh, God, not at all. And with respect to McTavish and to Nikitin, I would say that based on everything we've seen, that Craig is looking through pretty rosy-colored glasses in suggesting that Nikitin's a top-four defenseman, right? It's not there, in my opinion. No. And I think conventional...
Did you say weed-colored glasses or rose-colored glasses?
So until he stops thinking that And the way he's going to stop thinking that is for Nikitin to just be Nikitin for long enough. I mean, there's going to come a point in time where he realizes that he's not, and something's going to have to give. So I mean, they're paying him like one, and so because of that, they're going to treat him like that, and they're going to play him like that until they just can't, which Dallas did, played him like he was until it just was so obvious he just couldn't. And so he healthy scratched him, right? So they publicly whipped him a little bit here and suggesting he wasn't in shape, didn't like the way the player reacted, is what it is. That just has to play itself out. But until he, you know, as long as he continues looking to Keaton and go, we've got a top four defenseman there, he's not thinking, I need to go get a top four defenseman. That's a problem. As long as he keeps looking at Oscar Klefbom and going, that's a top pairing defenseman, he doesn't think he needs to go find a top pairing defenseman. That's a problem. As long as he looks at Justin Schultz and says, this guy's developing into our number one power play unit defenseman, he doesn't need to go get another number one power play unit defenseman. That's a problem. I mean, Justin Schultz, in his last 140-some NHL games, has one power play goal. Like, he's got 11 power play points this season. That's 36th in the league among NHL defensemen. And he's 19th in power play ice time. So, like, this guy is not this great offensive defenseman at this point in his career. Mike Green, at the same age?
Nice.
Mike Green, at the same age that Justin Schultz is right now, had 73 points in 68 games at 23 years old. So to give you a sense for where Schultz's development is, like number one power play unit, ace offensive defenseman.
Yeah, Mike Green was also first round pick, right? I don't think Schultz is...
For sure.
Right?
Like, for sure. But I guess what I'm saying is Justin Schultz their power play answer for the next 7 years on the blue line? Is that the guy? I mean, he's okay. He's serviceable. Justin Falk has, I think he's got 4 or 5 power play goals already this year and more power play points. This is a guy that the Oilers feel Schultz is way ahead of. Like, you got to look at guys for what they are, project what they possibly could be, but be realistic about it.
Yeah.
Because that changes what you think you need. They don't think they need a power play defenseman. We don't need that. Okay, well, let's see what Schultz can do here. But so far, is he the answer on the point, on the power play?
Well, their power play has been pretty successful with him out there, right? It's just not a power play that revolves around a big shot, that's all.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
And he's got the shot from there. He can get it through. I'm not saying he's a bad player, and the power play has been good. I guess maybe take Schultz out of the picture. My point is, the way Craig evaluates his players leads him to decide what he does and doesn't need. And if he's not going into this offseason thinking he needs a couple of top-pairing defensemen, at least one, if he's thinking, well, I've got Schultz and I've got Klefbom, that's a problem.
Yeah, well, you...
He just might be thinking that.
Yeah, well, you won't get an argument from me if that's the case. And that's what I've said all along, Ryan. The biggest question heading into the offseason isn't who the orders are acquiring. Is it the people that are making the decisions, are they the right people to make the decisions?
Yeah.
That's the hardest. That, to me, is the number one question. And unless you ever hear from the owner, you have no idea. And I wrote it in December. I don't think it's a lock 100% that the management, as it stands, is safe. I really don't. I don't believe that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't. I have nothing that indicates to me that they're in jeopardy in any way, shape, or form. There is no, I got nothing. Like, there, I think that, you know, between Bob Nicholson and Kevin Lowe and Craig McTavish, that those three are pretty firmly locked in there under Daryl Cates. They're all very good friends and running this thing together. And then maybe on the Scott Housen level, I mean, who knows? There's some pretty deep friendships there too. But this triumvirate is locked in, and I don't know that they're going anywhere. I'm not sure what you think could happen that would cause Maxey to lose his job at this point. I mean, it's very unusual for a GM to get fired after year two. Like, that's pretty unusual. General managers usually get 3 or 4 years.
I'd have to go look at the course of general managers. Have they not improved their team at all? That's the question. So, Rashard, we're way late. We got to go. So I will chat with you tomorrow.
Okay, pal. Take care.